if something doesn't work, instead of patiently trying to arrange to fix it, we destroy it, and then we have nothing. On a larger scale, we build big bombs to supposedly protect ourselves. Then to make money, we sell those bombs to someone, and then that person bombs us and we die. This is material life. The cheaters and the cheated. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he said this material world is nothing other than a world of cheaters and cheated. When we want to cheat someone else, we actually cheat ourselves. People want to be cheated, so there are so many cheaters. But those cheaters are equally cheated. In this way, everyone suffers. So now what do we have? The Indian Railways is suffering, and the people are suffering, and everyone's suffering, except the devotees who are chanting the holy names of Krishna. Anyways, what to do? Earthquakes, plagues, late trains. The degradation of the human consciousness. The human consciousness, which has been specifically and exclusively created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to realize his eternal relationship with Krishna, to extricate himself from all the threefold miseries of material life. That same consciousness, which is meant to be thoroughly transcendental, is so much upset and disturbed and agitated and fried because a train is late, that it's like the end of the world, that they engage in such lowly activities of destruction and violence because the train is late. This is human existence. What an insult, what an embarrassment, what a degradation. Better if they were on the platform and they had big Harinam Sankirtan, and instead they just talk all nonsense and destroy each other, and curse, and engage in sinful activities. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this age of Kali, knowing that this is the situation. In the age of Kali, the slightest provocation, the slightest misunderstanding can create hatred, violence, and war. It was the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. And the syndrome of quarrel and hypocrisy is endlessly cycling and spiraling into deeper and deeper complexities, perplexities, and bondage. In a state of mind that is ignorant of the truth, every time we try to solve a problem, we make the problem worse. Today we have seen or heard of the most base, ridiculous illustration of this syndrome. Trying to solve a problem, we make it worse. Or as one great speaker once said, if you pass stool and urine in your own bed, you're the one that has to sleep in it. And that's what we're doing in the name of advancement of civilization. We're polluting the atmosphere. We're polluting the water, the air, the earth, the mines. Engage in acts of destruction. And ultimately, we have to live with it. We have to live with the mess that we're making. This is Kali Yuga. And it is explained that just like in a forest, sometimes no one intentionally lights a fire. But just by nature's laws, the winds blow the bamboos and they rub together and sparks come and then the whole forest blazes in fire. In the same way, even without intention, just by the nature of the world, people do things and say things which they may or may not intend, and it creates friction, and that friction escalates into blazing fire and so much disturbance. So this is the world that we live in, world of quarrel and hypocrisy, and we cannot change that. All we can do is protect ourselves and to try to create an atmosphere where others are protected from the onslaughts of Kali Yuga. And we should know that just as there is so much agitation and conflict on the railway platforms, that same propensity is there to come between individuals, even within the Vaishnav society. One person's neophyte perception can influence others and create conflict, distrust, break to pieces Vaishnava relationships. It's actually the greatest danger. Because as an army of devotees, we have the power of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu behind us to attack and destroy victoriously over the influences of the age of Kali. But if those influences infiltrate, as long as they remain outside of ourselves, we will be victorious over them. But if those influences infiltrate to create quarrel, hypocrisy, dissension amongst ourselves, then we will be defeated, and our mission will be defeated. So what is the greatest enemy in all of the creation? Our own nonsense tendency to find faults and to misunderstand other devotees. That is the greatest enemy. because that enemy could not only destroy ourselves, but it could cause great harm and disturbance to the movement that has come to save the world. And nothing else can disturb this movement. So every time we have a tendency to find faults with other devotees, we should know that this tendency is the greatest demon that has come to destroy our own spiritual lives and attack and be the greatest enemy to the mission of the Lord. That is a fact. When we cannot see the good in other Vaishnavas, but we see the bad, and we speak this way, we should know that we are nothing less than the servants of Kali. We are acting as soldiers for Kali to destroy Mahaprabhu's movement. That is reality. And we try to correct things by retaliating in this type of way, and ultimately we just destroy it for ourselves and others. What is the difference? Maybe there was a mistake made in the train lines. Maybe it was purposeful, maybe it was not purposeful. But when we react aggressively, we ruin it for them, for us, for everyone. So therefore, the Vaishnav consciousness is to serve, to see good, and to forgive. That is a Vaishnav. Vaishnav doesn't mean dhoti or sari. Vaishnav does not mean tilak or neck beads. Vaishnav does not mean attending Mangalarti or chanting 16 rounds. Vaishnav means these qualities. And all of these regulative principles are meant to help us to live by these qualities. That is a Vaishnav. Sometimes advanced and inexperienced devotees, they find faults in serious deviations from moral and philosophical principles, but only for the purpose of protecting and enlivening and enthusing others to the right track. Never simply for the sake of criticizing. Never to just point out a fault. If we are not in a position of realization and authority to actually know what we're talking about, what we're seeing and what we're saying, and if we do not have the power to enliven and enthuse and set things straight, then we have no right to speak anything against any other devotee. If we do, we are the servants and the soldiers of Kali. We become the greatest enemies to Vaishnavism. If we want to be Vaishnav, if a devotee is honestly and sincerely trying to serve Krishna, despite so many defects, we will see the fault in ourself. And even if we see it in them, we will never speak it. And even if we see it in them, we will be humble enough to know that the fault of me seeing this is billions and trillions of times worse than the fault that is being seen. That is Vaishnava. That is a devotee. If we're not willing to strive to live like this, we are not devotees. We are rascals. This is what all of the acharyas and this is what all the scriptures are teaching us. Because, as Srila Prabhupada said, this movement, it survives on the basis of love and trust. It grows on the basis of love and trust. And if we are not a part of stimulating love and trust, however difficult people may be, however many faults other devotees may have, if we are not trying to stimulate love and trust, then all of our endeavors are counterproductive. To try to deal with a little thing, we create a massive problem. That is the nature of Kali Yuga. And then we have to pay the consequences. So we should just strive for one thing only. To be humble servants, always trying to respect and honor other Vaishnavas. If we can do that in our life, Krishna will provide everything else to send us back home, back to God. Because if we are not following that principle, even all of our sadhana is not pleasing to Krishna. If you're chanting the holy names strictly, and then you're offending devotees, it's like touching Krishna on the feet and then hitting him with a stick on the head. You think he'll be pleased with your devotion? If you go and you say, oh, if someone comes to you and touches your feet and say, oh, I worship you, you are so nice, and then he gets up and smashes you in the face with a rock, will you take that devotion seriously? Yet when we do our sadhana, but then we criticize devotees who are more dear to Krishna than Krishna himself, even if they may make mistakes, even if they may have some faults, if they are sincerely trying, if we criticize them, then we are beating Krishna with a stick. Even worse, if I touch your feet and give you a gift, and then I kick your child, your son, in the face, will you think, oh, he loves me? You will reject me. So we must understand this, and we have to take it seriously. The influence of Kali is so strong. The tendency is so powerful from within and without. We cannot give in to it. Jnanam yad apriti nivritti gunorm ichakram Atma prasad utayatra guneshva sangha Kaivalya samata patastra tata bhakti yoga Ko nirvrito hari katha surathin nakuryat transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord, Hari. His knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment and being transcendental. It is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. According to Bhagavad Gita, the characteristics of pure devotees are wonderful. The complete functional activities of a pure devotee are always engaged in the service of the Lord. And thus the pure devotees exchange feelings of ecstasy between themselves and relish transcendental bliss. The transcendental bliss is experienced even in the stage of devotional practice, sadhana avastha, if properly undertaken under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And in the mature stage, the developed transcendental feeling culminates in realization of the particular relationship with the Lord by which a living entity is originally constituted, up to the relationship of conjugal love with the Lord, which is estimated to be the highest transcendental bliss. This bhakti yoga, being the only means of God realization, is called Kaivalya. Srila Jiva Goswami quotes the Vedic version, Eko Narayano Deva Paravaranam Parama Aste Kaivalya Samgita. In this connection, and establishes that Narayan, the personality of Godhead, is known as Kaivalya, and the means which enables ones to approach the Lord is called the Kaivalya Pantha, or the only means of attainment of Godhead. This Kaivalya Pantha begins from Shravana, or hearing those topics that relate to the personality of Godhead, and the natural consequence of hearing such Harikatha is attainment of transcendental knowledge, which causes detachment from all mundane topics for which a devotee has no taste at all. For a devotee, all mundane activities, social and political, become unattractive. And in the mature state, such a devotee becomes uninterested even in his own body and what to speak of bodily relatives. In such a state of affairs, one is not agitated by the waves of the material modes. There are different modes of material nature and all mundane functions in which a common man is very much interested or in which he takes part become unattractive for the devotee. This state of affairs is described herein as pratinibritta gunormi, and it is possible by atma prasad, or complete self-satisfaction, without any material connection. The first-class devotee of the Lord attains this stage by devotional service, but despite his loftiness for the Lord's satisfaction, he may play the voluntary part of a preacher of the Lord's glory and dovetail all into devotional service, even mundane interest, just to give the neophytes a chance to transform mundane interest into transcendental bliss. Srila Rupa Goswami has described this action of a pure devotee as nirbandha krishna sambhande yuktam vairagyam uchyate. Even mundane activities dovetailed with service to the Lord are also calculated to be transcendental or approved Kaivalya affairs. In this beautiful verse from the third chapter of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is explained that transcendental knowledge is that knowledge which reconnects our relationship with the Lord, Sri Krishna. And the result of such knowledge is that we are no longer subjected to the influences of the whirlpools of the material modes of nature. Srila Prabhupada explains that the modes of material nature are everywhere in this world. And on the most exalted, purified state, we are so much immersed simply in remembering Krishna and tasting the sweetness of his transcendental glories that, like a lotus flower, we are simply not affected by the modes of material nature. But in the aspiring stages, we must somehow or other keep our mind and senses fixed in devotional service and tolerate the influences of the modes of material nature and not succumb to them. This is called tapasya. Tapo divyam putrakayena satvam sujhadyasya brahma sokyantanam tam. Hariva O Maharaj. Please sit.
Please come.
As we are aspiring to progress in spiritual life, we must be willing to tolerate the urges created by the modes of material nature. And the only way possible that we can do this is to keep our mind and senses always engaged in positive, purifying spiritual activities. Just as we are saying, in this age of Kali Yuga, there is an all-pervading tendency to egoistically find faults in others. But if we're sincere about Krishna consciousness, we will perform the austerity of speaking the glories of the Lord and the glories of the devotees. And by keeping our mind and senses occupied through this most wonderful and purifying activity, then we are able to tolerate our tendency to speak nonsense, to speak criticisms or blasphemies. So this is very important. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, there is a verse that is, as long as devotees are gathering together to specifically hear and chant the glories of the Lord, then enmity and envy cannot exist amongst them. But as soon as the subject changes, that tendency is there. So we must curb this tendency as a matter of life and death by chanting the glories of the Lord, by chanting the names of the Lord, by speaking of the good qualities of Krishna, of the previous acharyas, of our God brothers, our God sisters, and all other Vaishnavas. And this is very essential. And whoever we are, our ability to please Krishna is dependent on our humility. And we find in the lives of the greatest Vaishnavas, this is always the prominent quality. There was a very great devotee who lived just a few generations after Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His name was Narahari Chakravarti. And Narahari, he was so pure, so humble, and so qualified. He was celibate from birth. He practically never engaged in any activities of sense gratification. He lived in the holy land of Vrindavan. He was a favorite disciple of his spiritual master. He was an expert musician. He knew how to wonderfully sing and dance and play musical instruments. And he actually perfected the science and the art of music. He was also extremely, profoundly, deeply learned in all the bhakti shastras. He could preach magnificently, convincingly, warm and transform the hearts of whoever would hear him submissively. He could properly quote the scriptures, and he had realized the conclusions of the scriptures. But yet, he always presented himself as such a humble servant of the servants of the Lord. In Vrindavan, with the blessings of his Gurudev, he became the cook for Radha Govindaji at Rupa Goswami's temple. And because of his sincere desire, he became the best of all the cooks. Krishna can empower his devotee in the most wonderful ways. He would cook varieties and varieties of the most tasteful preparations for the pleasure of the Lord. And throughout the day, he would always keep himself busy in doing services which helped to remind him that he was eternally the humble servant of the servant of the servant. He would, with his own hands, for many hours every day, he would clean the courtyard of the Radha Govinda temple. He would sweep it, he would pick up the garbages, he would dispose of it. He would also, with his own hands, he would make sandalwood to be offered to the pujaris to give to the Lord. He would also very carefully go out and he would pick tulsi leaves to give to the pujaris to offer to the Lord. He would also roam around Vrindavan finding nice flowers and bringing them back, making garlands to give to the pujaris to offer the Lord. And for the cooking that would go on in the temple, he would go out into the forests of Braja and he would very carefully pick up the firewood, the wood that was on the ground, and he would carry the firewood back with his own hands and offer it to the cooks and the pujaris for their services. He did the work of 10 men. He practically single-handedly brought all the firewood, got all the tulsi leaves, all the flowers, and did all the cleaning. And yet at the same time, he was writing some of the most majestic and important literatures in the whole Vaishnav history. Bhakta Ratnakar, Srinivas Charitra, Narottam Vilas, so many others, which even to this day, Gaudiya Vaishnavas consider to be on the level of the Vedic literatures themselves, so full of devotion, revealing such deep, profound, and highest philosophical truths. But his literatures were mainly simply praising the glories of the devotees of the past. And the pujaris at the Radha Govindaji temple, they would plead with him, "Why are you working so hard doing all these menial services that anyone can do? Sweeping the grounds, picking the flowers, carrying the wood." He was the greatest writer of the time. He was the greatest musician of the time. He was one of the best preachers of the time. They would plead with him to stop. And with a sincere and genuine heart, he would reply that I am the most fallen. I have no qualification. I do not deserve to be called a devotee, nor do I have any qualification to engage in Krishna's service. But all of you Vaishnava devotees, you are so kind, you are so merciful, that you are allowing me to try the best I can to render some little bit of service. It is your glory, it is your mercy that all I am made of. This is the quality of a real Vaishnava. Such a devotee is always busy with his body, mind, words, and life in engaging in positive devotional service. But such a devotee never takes credit, nor does he even give credit to Krishna, because he cannot reach Krishna directly to get his mercy. But such a devotee gives all credit to the spiritual master and to the assembly of Vaishnavas who are bestowing the mercy of Krishna upon him. And such a devotee always feels himself never as a great author, never as a great speaker, never as a great cook, never as a great money maker, but always sees himself as just the servant of the servant of the servant. So this is the wonderful lesson that we learn, which is the very essence of the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this is what we must always strive to follow in the footsteps of such personalities. Because it is that ingredient of selflessness, pridelessness, that gives flavor to our service for the satisfaction of Radha and Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes?
You cannot see weird things in the other Vaishnava. If you are watching a better way, then you are serving company. So, in the case of Purushottara, previously we are collecting 11 rupees from so many persons, but now other Brahmachari who just came in our temple, they are going to people and they are asking them, we don't want actually your 11 rupees, but we are coming to you to give you supreme knowledge, their document is, and outside of the temple in the open ground they are taking. when Mataji are complaining to them, they are talking to Mataji that you close your doors. And they are not getting and attending Mangala Arati. They are keeping dirty temple. So what do you think about this type of Vaishnava?
Are you better than them? Say it in the microphone. Are you better than them?
No, Mataji.
So why are you speaking these things?
Because society is complaining us.
That is a managerial problem. It is not a question of finding fault with them. It is a question of teaching them properly. If a child comes to the first standard and doesn't know the ABCs, does the teacher say, "You fool, get out of here. You're stupid, ignorant. Get out. You're useless." The teacher patiently tries to teach them. This is A, this is B, and this is C. This is the problem. Devotees may not be very experienced. They may not be very advanced. They may gossip. They may fault find. They may do things wrong. Don't find fault with them. Be a good example. Help others, teach them to do things properly and to understand the right way. I know these devotees in Kurukshetra. They're honest. They're sincere. But they just aren't very well trained. And if we take the time to help them to understand the right way, then they'll be wonderful. But if we just want to find fault and think what should we think about them, then we become a bigger problem than they are. Our tendency to find fault in others is worse than the fault that we're finding. In most cases. Now, by Krishna's mercy, Maharaj has raised his hand, so that means he has to come and sit here to speak.
No, I've got a
loud
voice.
No.
If someone who finds fault with others is often projecting his own faults in the other person.
We were just discussing the other day, Mahaprabhu was in my office, and one gentle man had come there, and it was funny, I had encouraged Mahaprabhu to take the man under his wing and engage him in Krishna's service. So I was speaking to the man, and then he had some criticism. Of Mahaprabhu, because Mahaprabhu is a very strong preacher, as you know. And either you love him or you hate him. But that's the way with strong preachers. They can do wonderful things. But anyway, he found some fault. So I'm one of those foolish kind of persons who thinks that, you know, you can just bring people together and he said this, what do you say, and, you know, sort things out. It doesn't always work, but I feel happy about it. So anyway, Mahaprabhu was there, and so the man, I confronted him, you know, and I told him about all the wonderful qualities of Mahaprabhu Das and how so many Vaishnavas in ISKCON Juhu's history have had so much faith in Mahaprabhu's preaching and have encouraged him and given him a lot of opportunity and etc. And that he should also have that initial faith. And then he said something, and then it reminded me of a quote that from Srila Prabhupada, from one of his purports, which I read years and years and years ago, and it always stuck in my heart somehow or other. But because I have a Kali Yuga memory, you know, I can't remember anything, so I have a computer that remembers everything for me. And we have a folio program. It's a computer program with all of Prabhupada's books and tapes and lectures and letters and everything on it, and there's an index. So you type two words or three words or whatever, and it gives you everything that Prabhupada ever said about that subject. So anyway, I found this verse, and I remembered. It's in the first, it's the first canto, 13th chapter, 39th verse, about the, it's at the end of the purport. And actually the discussion is Yudhisthira, who was like Narahari Chakravarti, the most qualified person, Dharmaraj. He was the emblem of Dharma. He,
should I bring the, huh? It's very important, that line. Should I bring
the? Oh, well, okay, okay. Mahaprabhu will bring the book. I can read it to you, but anyway, Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was so wonderful that he never told a lie, and he was so dedicated to Dharma that he didn't touch the ground. He always, wherever he was, one, he had the benediction. I guess it's a benediction because the ground is pretty dirty these days. I'm informed that the people who caught the plague caught it because of walking on the